Probably wouldn't have done that in a regular show.
That was the how to do it and how not to do it.
Right, there you go. Hey, I'm the bass player. Check me out. Hey.
They'll forget about you. So you're gone, then they remember.
So, you know, one thing that is so great about your playing, besides the fact that it's, you know, definitely in time, in tune, and all that, is that I feel like the notes are really big and, you know, substantial enough to make the rest of the band just sort of rest nicely on that big tone that you put out. So, when you go to a slap, suddenly the tone is going to be kind of interrupted with a clickety click, you know. So how do you make decisions about using the slap?
Well, you'll hear a swell in volume of the music, dynamics or whatever. So in between lines or between a solo and going into a singing verse or a chorus, there's a little swell in the music. It comes back up and then back out and make way for whatever's going to come up front, which is, you know, what's nice about the one microphone is that whatever's supposed to be up front is right in front of this microphone. So at those times when somebody's taking a solo and walking away, there's a little lull in the music, so you build the dynamic up, you know, and it kind of brings it all back around, then it drops away for the vocalist.
All right.
So I tend to do it more in between things, you know, unless it's an instrumental or something where it's a really driving tune and you get behind the banjo with it or something like that. But for the most part, you try to keep it out of the way of what's happening here, except in those times when you're building up to something.
And do you have certain things that you know you're going to do at certain points in the song, or do you just kind of go in the moment on instinct sometimes?
Both. You know, there's some things, there's sort of a set pattern or the blueprint was made on a record or something that I saw somebody else do, you know, previous versions of the band that I just sort of incorporated into what I do. But there's a few things where, you know, I won't do it just exactly the same every time.
Is there any particular bass player that you took a lot of modeling after, or somebody that played with Del in the previous years?
Well, Del's brother is pretty much the
Jerry.
Jerry McCurry, yeah. He's sort of Uncle Jerry, as we call him. He sort of is, to me, the consummate bluegrass bass player. You know, I call it blue-collar bluegrass. It's he's one of those guys that just doesn't have any strength limitations. I mean, he plays hard, loud, and he can slap, and it's just so rhythmic, you know. And the way that he plays, he snaps the strings a lot when he's on stage, so it's a real succinct rhythm. He's always, you know,
bouncing it off the bridge.
Yeah, and you won't hear that so much on record as you will on stage, you know, if you saw him play with Del, and it's, they have a rhythm, a musical feel that is unique to them, and it's really in that drive that you get out of that kind of playing, right, where it's really succinct beat and that kind of thing. So I don't exactly play like that all the time, but I think I borrowed a lot of the elements of what he tried to do and the way that it works rhythmically with this band. It doesn't work with every band, because some bands they lay back more, or it's a little bit of a quieter thing. This is a very, you know, I always say it's an aggressive playing band, right, rhythmically.
So you know, if you're asked to sit in with a seldom seen and they play Wait a Minute, you're not...
I say, wait a minute, I gotta back off here.
Okay, that's in our songbook, you know.
You know, it's just dynamics. Everybody, you know, musicians, everybody has a different approach and a different feel for music. And this band has its own particular direction, which is, I would say, leaning forward and rhythmically. It's a drive, and it leans, the beat is, doesn't speed so much as it just leans forward and has a push to it. And you can get that by, you know, playing a little harder or whatever, and snapping the string.
Are you, is the being sort of in the front part of the beat or whatever, which a lot of bluegrass people talk about, what does that mean to the bass player? It doesn't mean you speed up but you put more attack into the note just to mark the beginning of the
note.
Right,
exactly. You know, in the attack of where the note's placed, it's sort of, you know, it's just, there's no hesitation at all, you know. And but you know, you can overdo it.
You gotta be ready. You gotta be ready.
You gotta know where the next note's gonna be.
Right. You bet.
But it's different. You know, everybody has a different feel, and it's just the way that this band plays.
Mm-hmm. Well, could I change the subject?
Please.
Mike does the best imitations out of anybody I know in bluegrass. Who would you like to imitate for us today?
I don't know. How about Kitsy Kuykendall?
Anybody? Yeah, there you go.
Do you guys know Kitsy Kuykendall? She's not been out here that much.
Bluegrass Unlimited.
Yeah, well. But
now, Pete! That's my. But
what, Kitsy?
I guess that's pretty.
Kitsy, what?
I guess that's pretty.
What's
inside.
On your mind?
I don't know.
No, that's a little inside. How about do you, Craig or Steve or anybody around here?
I never do anybody in front of them. people get really sensitive about being imitated. It really is a form of flattery. But when it's you personally, in person, it doesn't sometimes.
If I go,
take it the wrong
if I go off stage, would you imitate me? I don't know.
I don't,
how do you do that? Personally, I seem to do it naturally.
Well, you know, when you imitate somebody, you have to capitalize on their real distinct characteristics of something that they do. So
I don't have any. Okay.
You do, well, but I haven't applied myself to developing it yet.
No.
Part of my repertoire.
Even Dell, I mean, you do a good Dell, but it's perfectly. I don't think he'd mind. Do you? Tom T. Hall. He's not here.
We have Bill Monroe for breakfast every day.
You and who? Tell us more, Tom.
I was down in Australia. They had this wonderful Frank Sinatra music playing. And I loved it. Every morning at breakfast, Frank Sinatra was playing.
Yeah.
And I told the waiter, I said, "This is wonderful music you have here." And the waiter said, do you have Frank Sinatra for, you know, in America?" He said, "No, we had Bill Monroe for breakfast every day."
I see. And now, of course, you're going to break
then he
into
wrote the
that.
Song.
Right, right. Okay, by now you got a song picked out, right, Del? Let's hear it from Mike and his imitations. Hey! All right, take it away.
No, surprise you, Pete. I don't have a song picked out yet.
Okay. Del, your shoe size.
You know, I wore those shoes I wore. I had to do a lot of walking yesterday. I don't know if you knew that or not. But I never knew where I was at here. I couldn't find my tent. So I made several trips, and today I thought I better wear my walking shoes. Plus, I have a wart on my foot down there.
Okay, we need to know these things. Did you happen to find the Gila Monster tent where you were expected all afternoon?
No, I never did find that tent. Is it across the river on the other side?
No. It's about halfway up.
Halfway. I sat looking up through there, and I thought, I bet it's up there somewhere.
Okay, you just got in the key of F. That probably is a signal to the boys, right?
That's a signal, yeah. Okay. You think we ought to do that new one, Ron? This is a new song, and it was written by Verlin Thompson. And we've recorded several of Verlin's songs before, and I hope we can do this one this morning. This is, I've got my notes for this on top of the guitar here. 1, 2, 3, yeah, number 3 right there. And I think Verlin is from Asheville, North Carolina, and he lives in Nashville now, and he writes a lot of songs, and he travels with that other songwriter, which I can't remember. Guy Clark. Yes, he travels with Guy. Both those guys can really write good songs. But this one he wrote, and it's titled The Asheville Turnaround.